comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at Talk Radio like nowhere else on Earth. That's here at The Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted you're here, and I'm delighted to be here as well, and I think we're going to have a very interesting time tonight. Quick reminder, if you haven't subscribed to the K-Files, be sure you do. It is our free weekly newsletter. And free really actually means free. So just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and subscribe, all right? Just click where it says K-Files. And also, a reminder, join us. Join us in the chat room in the members area for our monthly chat on Saturday evening. Now, you need to be an active member. And if you have, this is something that'll be a little bit different. If you have a webcam and a microphone, we're going to try something different. We're going to try to do a video chat. Now, if you don't have a webcam or you just don't want to use it, no problem. The chat panel will still work as per normal. But this is going to be something a bit new for us to try. It should be a lot of fun. And I hope you're there. If you're not a member, you can take care of that as well. You simply click there where it says become a member. And it's 23 cents a day. It's not expensive. You can't buy anything at the store for 23 cents. Not anymore. But you can get a whole bunch of stuff for 23 cents. Right here at the Kevin Smith Show. 23 cents a day, $6.95 a month. And you get the video chats. Now, we've done those with guests before, but I've never opened it up and tried that with just whoever's in the chat room. We're going to try, and we'll see how it works. Might not work. We'll see. We'll find out. It's our first time. So it should be a lot of fun, but you get the video chats, you get to watch the shows live, you get to watch the latest show. We also present, as we did before the show started tonight, we present some extra stuff sometimes, and we'll be doing that again at the end of the show tonight. We showed a documentary that features William Shatner, Captain Kirk. It's an old documentary, and it's one that I had never seen before. I think a lot of you probably will not have seen it before, but we'll show it again at the end of the show tonight. In addition to all of that, you also get our archives, which we call K-Pods. You get our chat room. You get our forums. You get Video Galaxy. There's just and a library of free ebooks you can download. There's just lots of stuff. Lots of stuff. And it's only $6.95 a month. Cheaper if you go quarterly and cheaper yet if you go annually. But if you go monthly, it's still a great deal. 23 cents a day. So if you haven't joined, do that. And then you'll be part of the party. We'll be back on the other side of this break to talk about ghosts. Okay, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As you noticed, that break was a little bit longer than normal, reason being we were not able to get our guest on the telephone. And I've sent him an email asking him to call in. Called the number, but it's apparently he's not at that number. So this has happened to us once or twice before, but we will attempt to push forward here. I need to bring you up to date on one more thing, and then we'll see what whether our guest calls us, and hopefully he will, and I hope everything's okay. Okay, Mark Maverick. You know, I told you about Mark Maverick yesterday, and I had received an email from Mark. Mark is the owner of Indy 104. Fabulous, fabulous radio station. And he had sent an email out a couple of weeks ago stating that he was very sick and would not be able for some time to do anything about updating his website or handling email or things like that. And that he was very sick and was having to recover. And so I waited for some time and still had not heard from him. And about 2 weeks passed and had not heard anything else from him. So I called yesterday and I got this voicemail, this voice message, saying that because of severe illness and hospitalization, he was unable to answer email or voicemail, and, he would be back on duty as soon as possible. Well, that's the first I had heard that he was hospitalized. So I shared that with you last night. Well, today I got a telephone call from Mark. And quite thankfully, Mark is home from the hospital. Now he's not well. He's back. He's back in the land of the living, but I would say he's probably got some ways to go yet. And so, those of you who are listening to us via Indy 104, please be aware of that. Be aware of the fact that he's been in the hospital. He is home. He is not well. He is still recuperating. And so if you notice that there's something not working or you wonder why he hasn't replied to your email, that's why. And, hey, cut the guy some slack. He's got the best internet radio station in America. And it's got absolutely fabulous, fabulous services. But cut him a little slack and let him get well. We're glad he's doing better, and I hope he's listening to us tonight. But I wouldn't expect that he would be because of his illness. But keep him in your thoughts, keep him in your prayers. Mark Maverick is a great guy and a real friend of this show. Okay, it would appear that we are not in touch with our guest. Is that correct? Okay, so what we're going to do is page two. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go open line tonight. I had not expected to do that, but we shall. And a couple of things in the news we have added a little feature to our website, and that is I don't know that how often we can update that, but we're going to try and keep it updated as much as possible. If you scroll down under where it shows you the graphic about tonight's show, if you just scroll down and look under there, you'll see some little news items. And one of them is Dr. Richard Sauder, who's been a guest on this show, has been arrested. On April the 16th, he was arrested. And I read several articles about this. Now, some articles said that he was innocently protesting at a missile site. and was arrested. Other articles said that he is, they allege that he crossed the fence into the missile site itself, into the restricted area. And one article that I read, in fact, I think I read this in a couple of them, said that as soon as he crossed over in, crossed the fence and was in the restricted area, alarms went off. Air Force security, of course, rushed out there to take care of whatever the alarm was. And he was detained. He was held for the local sheriff's office, who came out and actually made the arrest. And he is charged with criminal trespass, according to the article, which is a Class C felony. Now, that's the lowest level felony, but a felony, you need to understand that a misdemeanor can never have a one-year sentence. A misdemeanor can have a sentence up to 364 days. But if you go to 365, that's a felony. The minimum sentence in a felony is 1 year. Okay? So if he is convicted of this, he will get a minimum of 1 year. Now, they may give, you know, they may set aside part of that. They may give him some probation if he is convicted of it. They may give him, they will give him credit for any time served already in jail. I don't know if he's bonded out yet or not. But now the deal is that, you know, he's from San Antonio. And being from San Antonio means that he's a long ways from Minot Air Force Base. And this missile silo was attached to the Minot Air Force Base. So he's a long way from home. And I'm going to go ahead and, like I said, we're going to go open line. And even though what I'm about to put on the screen shows a picture of our guest is not with us. So, but this has our telephone numbers on it. Here's what I'd like for us to start out with here tonight. What do you think about this whole thing? Now, keep in mind, I know Richard Sauter is someone that is well thought of in the UFO community because he writes those books about the secret underground bases. And he's been a guest on this show. But now, setting aside the idea that he is, so to speak, one of us, setting that aside, and just looking at the facts of the case as we know them, the facts of the case as we know them are that he went to this site to protest. It is alleged that he crossed the fence and was in the restricted area, that he was detained by Air Force security, then arrested by the sheriff's office, and is charged with a with criminal trespass, a Class C felony. Do you think that that's justifiable? Do you think that that is, in fact, the right thing to do? Well, if you think it is the right thing to do, I guess what you need to do is hang on to your hat, because we now have our guest with us, so we're going to back out of open line. We're glad to have Richard Sennett with us, and we will I want to know what you think about that, but when we do open the phone lines later, I want to get your opinion on what you think about the Richard Sauter thing, as well as what we're talking about here tonight, okay? Richard Sennett is my guest this evening, and Richard, welcome to the show.
Well, glad to be on.
Richard, you know, the whole story about how you got started back in 1978 in ghost hunting is a fascinating story, and I know you've told it a billion times, but you were in San Antonio, and interestingly, the story that I was talking about is Richard Sauter, and he lives in San Antonio. But now we'll shift gears. We want to go from Richard Sauter to ghosts. 1978, you're back in San Antonio, and you see an apparition, the apparition of a hooded monk, and that sets you on a journey of ghost hunting. So sort of, let's kind of kick off with that event. Take us back to that and tell us what happened.
Well, I was part of an archaeological team, and we were digging at the old mission San Antonio de Padua, and that is one of the old Spanish missions out here in California. Well, we...
So you were not in San Antonio, Texas?
Oh, no. This is California.
Okay.
But it is San Antonio. It's just, you know, Spanish always use the same names over and over again.
Yeah.
And late at night, about 12:30, I closed the lab, walked into the courtyard, and saw this figure of a monk, a ghost. And I didn't know it was a ghost. In fact, I walked up to it hoping to talk to the figure because, you see, the mission is still Franciscan, and they still have monks there, real monks. And I thought he was one of the real monks out for a stroll, and I got closer, and the thing just disappeared. Now, I've been watching this for at least, 2 to 3 minutes, so it wasn't something that was just off the cuff, and it looked real. I mean, it was like someone wearing a monk's habit with a hood, but then when it disappeared, it was very abrupt. It just all of a sudden was gone. I would just stood there with my mouth open. I didn't know what I had seen. I hadn't been expecting ghosts. And then I just, in fact, you know what my first reaction was? I thought that someone had fallen into a hole. I was looking at the ground trying to find the hole where it disappeared, and there was, of course, nothing there. And then it dawned on me that this must be one of those ghosts.
Now, how close did you get to it before it disappeared?
About 10 feet.
That's pretty close.
Very close. And I remember even in my mind's eye today, I can see the folds of its garment, the shadows and the moonlight, everything.
And, well, now, tell us a little bit about the moonlight. I mean, was it a bright night or...
No, it wasn't. It was a very dim night.
Mm-hmm.
But this figure was also carrying a candle.
How interesting. And the candle also disappeared?
Device. So it had its own illumination. And when it disappeared, it took the candle with him. So I was left quite literally in the dark.
Yes, okay. Now, the candle he was carrying, was it casting light out around him?
Yes.
Just like a real candle.
In fact, like a regular, like the kind of candle you might have had with a little holder with a ring on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, it was just a little bit ahead of me. So I could see the candlelight. He was holding the thing in front of him, so I could see it sort of almost outlining him in the darkness. And then, of course, as I said, it was gone. And it was, as I say, totally unexpected, totally not anything that I was wanting to see or desirous to see or anything like that. And as I said, for several moments, I just stood there with my mouth open until I realized it was a ghost. And because of that, that's why I got to be frightened. I wasn't frightened before that. And I went back to my room and tried to sleep. Of course, I couldn't. I had to leave the light on. It was such a dramatic, unexpected, weird event.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, I talked to the monks who lived there, and they said that others had seen something just like this before, and that they referred to it as Brother Joseph. And there had been a very pious member of their order who, not too long ago, it wasn't in olden times, but in more recent times, this man who was just a really nice guy, a nice monk, everybody loved him, kind of a very popular figure. He was elderly and finally died of a heart attack. But before he died, he would every night leave his room at 12:30 and go to the church to pray with a candle. And after his death and burial, they would see him doing that same ritual. Of course, I hadn't heard the story, but that's what I bumped into.
One of the types of, I'll use the word haunting, and you can correct me in a moment here if that's the wrong word, but one of the types of hauntings that I have heard people talk about here is residual hauntings. And we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this, and we'll talk about, was this a residual? Okay, we are back, and my guest this evening is Richard Sennett. Richard, by the way, has several websites, and I just picked one and linked to it, because from it you can get to his other ones. Richard, before we went away for break, I asked the question, was this a residual, or is this a full-body apparition, real ghost, or what are we looking at here?
Well, it's hard to say, but ghosts of that type usually are what is now called residual hauntings, or just hauntings. They're a bit like a videotape, so they're not really a thinking entity. They're just kind of a leftover trace, which repeats over and over again like a loop of film. That's what I believe I encountered at the old mission. And a lot of the ghosts that people report are these residual spirits, leftover energies, perhaps deposited there by some tragedy or some unfulfilled wish, but just repeating over and over again.
Okay, then, what is a ghost?
Ah, that's the big rub. We don't know. There's something that shouldn't be there. Now, the old theory that they're all just spirits of the dead is knocked into a cocked hat. I mean, some of them are, but we're talking about 20%. The other 80% could be any number of different explanations, from residual energy to ESP to projections of the mind to something caused by living entities, any number of different things.
So then I guess the word or the term ghost is just sort of a cover-all umbrella now.
Yeah, it's how I use it. Of course, there are different ghost hunters. They all have different terminologies. Some use spirit for one thing, and an apparition for another, and ghost for another. But again, you'll meet another ghost hunter, and they'll have a whole different set of terms. So that's one of the things we really lack, is a common jargon, a common set of descriptions that we could all use to even carry on a proper conversation. And of course, it's very difficult.
All right, now let me ask you this, because this has come up several times over the past several months. It's not something I get asked in every show, but I do get asked about it from time to time. First, Now, this is not a show about extraterrestrials. However, we're getting a lot of reports, and we have over a number of years gotten reports of extraterrestrials that can just appear and then just vanish. So the first question would be, what percentage of ghost reports would you think may fall into that category? And it's not a ghost at all, but it's one of those vanishing extraterrestrials.
Very good question, because if both studies, the study of ghosts and the study of UFOs and related phenomenon, there are many things that are alike. Mm-hmm. For instance, in a haunted house, we get high readings of electromagnetic energy. In places where UFOs are seen or landing sites, we get a high readings of electromagnetic energy. So there are a lot of things that cross over. So I do think it's possible that some of the ghosts we describe might well be extraterrestrial. And a lot of the people who see what they believe to be extraterrestrial may well be encountering ghosts. Of course, there's a whole other field you didn't mention, and that is angels. Are ghosts, in fact, angelic divine creatures sent by God or some divine agency to do their work on the earth? Well, again, they disappear, they act in the similar ways, and again, EMF readings go really high around these sightings as well. So you've got a lot of mysteries, a lot of questions, and very few answers.
Okay, now we'll come back to angels in just a moment, but let me ask part two of the extraterrestrial question. Mm-hmm. If an extraterrestrial comes to this earth, mm-hmm. and for whatever reason is killed here, either somebody shoots him or his spaceship crashes or whatever, but he dies here. Does that ET have a spirit that can appear as an apparition?
Oh, that's a good question. Perhaps they do. We just don't know. I believe that if there are such things, they may well be taken care of by their comrades, who probably wouldn't leave them behind. So the idea of finding an extraterrestrial skeleton, I think, would be quite remote. Also, you're making an assumption that the extraterrestrial is something like us, that they thinks like us, has different, is sort of perhaps a bald-headed version of ourselves. They may have a whole different way of thinking than we do. Mm-hmm. It could be that their bodies are completely consumed when they pass away. It could very well.
Well, I don't think that they are just like us. I'm not assuming that. I'm just asking about the ghost side of them. And here's what's behind it. On this show, we had someone who, by the way, is going to be with me tomorrow night. Dick Criswell is going to be back with me tomorrow night. Dick Criswell was a member of a team formed under DARPA. It was called AlphaCom. And they, to just do a thumbnail sketch of this, they were investigating all the information that the U.S. government has about extraterrestrials with a view to facilitating disclosure. And this was sanctioned under DARPA. Okay, he has told us that there are people that have served in that hospital out in Roswell, on the base in Roswell, mm-hmm. that have said that there are people have seen the ghosts of these extraterrestrials that died in that crash and whose bodies were brought to that hospital. And that's what spawned the question.
That would be a place I'd love to investigate, if that's true. That's the first I've heard of that. Mm-hmm. But no, it's well, if you consider, if there are such things as extraterrestrials, if they are intelligent, as we assume they would be, to get here and all that, then perhaps they do create ghosts or something that we would equate with a ghost, some leftover energy, some like a residual haunting. Well, I'd love to go there. I spent a weekend investigating that hospital and see if there's anything to these rumors.
Yeah, I don't know if that building is still intact and standing, and I don't know if it's still in a secured area if it is standing. But that was back in 1947 when that event took place. But since that time is when they say they've seen the ghosts.
Well, the airbase is closed now, and most of the places which are secured are now open. So I would think that it would be very possible to
get in there,
to actually get some kind of permission to go there. I think that would make a great investigation.
I think it would too. All right, but now then, since I'm not assuming that they are just like us, although I would not be surprised if there are some that are very human looking and human like. Mm-hmm. But I think there's probably a great variety of different types of ETs. But if they do produce a spirit when they die, and I don't mean produce, but I mean if that's what results when they die, are we talking about spirit being equivalent to consciousness?
I don't think that we are. I think that spirits are not like the ghost of Mrs. Muir or fictional sorts of things. I believe they're more like emotions, big balls of emotional energy. And as such, I don't think they do a lot of thinking. I think they're all very emotional, a very kind of that kind of energy. It's not a thinking process the way we, you or I, might think. I think there are leftover tasks they want to have done. There are things that they need to finish that they believe to be important, and these leftover energies or emotions are surged into some kind of a force or an entity. That's my theory. But in the few times I've managed to communicate with ghosts, they've all been very emotional. They've been one-tracked in their thinking. They're not like going to carry on a conversation with you. They just want to talk about one thing, you know, how they died or how they were screwed over or how they were murdered or something like that, over and over and over again. So I tend to think that they are not a complete person. You know, a lot of ways I think ghosts are a bit like, you know, the three faces of Eve, where you have multiple personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when a person dies, and by the way, this is what the ancient Greeks thought, their soul split up, and part of it went on to wherever they're supposed to go, but a part of it might remain behind. And I think what we're getting when we get ghosts are fragments of a soul or a personality, not a complete soul. Now, of course, I could be wrong. And, of course, there are a few rare advantages or cases where people actually have interacted with a spirit ghost, if you will, and it's acted much like the stories we find in fiction. But those are incredibly rare. The real stories tend to be these emotional cast-off personalities with a one-track mind that eventually sort of fade out as time goes by.
We're about a minute and 20 seconds away from break, something like mm-hmm. that. So we'll have to kind of keep this a little bit brief, but you talked about the few times that you have communicated with ghosts. How do you communicate with a ghost?
Through the uses of a medium is one. There are other variety of medium as of means to do this. What I've gotten, again, I cannot say these are valid. Obviously, you're doing with something this flaky. You have to, you know, put your tongue firmly in your cheek and hope for the best. But I must admit, some of the material I've collected, even though it's flaky, is compelling. There's some interesting stuff. That's not things that I would have imagined. Things like, I ask you if you're a ghost, you know, what do people look like? Had answered saying that the living people resembled big globs of jello, glowing orange or red jello, which sounds bizarre, right?
Mm-hmm.
It also said that it could hear color and see sound.
All right, we have to step away for break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Richard Sennett. Richard, you said that in communicating with these ghosts, you have received information that they can feel color and smell sound. Is that what you said?
No, they could actually see sound and hear color.
Ah.
So evidently their perceptions are very different from ours. They don't live in our world. They are not into our time frame. To them, you know, an hour could be as long as a few minutes. Most of them seem to have no idea how much time has passed since their death. They seem to be living in a world very different from our own.
Do you think that in some way they are in another parallel existence, parallel universe, and that for some reason they are able to sort of get through the veil, so to speak?
I believe that's very possible. Their existence certainly isn't the same as ours. I do believe they have the ability to skip through time. Because I long wondered, here I saw this ghost in this courtyard of a mission. It walked halfway through and then disappeared. And the question I had is, where did it go? And my theory is this, that it skipped through time. So here I was on a Thursday seeing it. Halfway in the middle of the courtyard, it jumped into next Friday. And of course, I can't go with them. So in my... to the ghost, I had disappeared. And to me, my perspective, it disappeared. This might also account for and explain things such as a ports, where items seemingly disappear in a house where there's supernatural activity, and then after a week or so, they seem to just magically reappear, sometimes in the same place they were when they vanished a week before. It could be that a ghost or something picked something up and then skipped through time and, of course, deposited it in its new framework. Now, but again, this is just speculation. There's much we don't know about ghosts. There's a lot more research that needs to be done.
All right, you have been a ghost hunter since 1978. And you go out and do ghost investigations.
That's correct.
Do you use any type of technology, any type of hardware to do these investigations?
Of course.
What do you use?
Well, I use first an e-meter. That's very important to get the electromagnetic fields. I use something called a cyber probe, which measures static electrical energy. I also use cameras. I use very sensitive tape recorders. I use video cameras of various different kinds. I try to collect audio phenomenon called EVP. I've managed to get some. I try to collect the images using a variety of different film and digital camera systems. I've tried all sorts of other types of tools as well, from something as silly as a dowsing rod, which I found very, very helpful. Englishman told me about them, and first I didn't quite believe them, but after using them, I found them to be very helpful in psychic investigations. So I go out with a whole battery of tools, but I don't go alone. I usually go with a team of people, and some of them are quite experts on the electronic side of ghost hunting. I also go out with psychics and others who are of a metaphysical bent. I believe that if you blend the two, the scientific and the metaphysical, you can actually produce more results. At least that's what I found in my 30-some years of investigating.
Have you ever had a situation where you had your e-meter and your other stuff turned on and it's not registering anything, and a psychic says there's a presence with us? Have you ever had that happen?
Yes, I have. And I've gone to places where people have had phenomena, things I've even seen, and yet my equipment reads zip, nothing.
How do you account for that? How do you account for that?
I really don't. We're left with a lot of questions. Now, of course, the one thing would be, oh, well, you're just mistaken. Something's not right. The psychic is just imagining it. You maybe have an upset stomach, too much garlic on your pizza, and that's the only reason you're thinking you see something where it's not recording. I don't think that. I think that the tools can be useful, but they're not ironclad. I think that there's more to the phenomenon than just random e-meter readings or anything like that. I think there's much we don't know. And so I usually try to take a layered approach, which means multiple visits with different teams to try to collect as much data. And then you compare that to what has been seen there and the history of the site to try to determine the answers to the great question. So is it really haunted? Is there anything there, or can it be explained logically? And yeah, a lot of cases I've been able to completely debunk a haunting and say, no, it's not caused by the ghostly captain buried under the cemetery grounds, but in fact is caused by a truck going by at a certain time every night. So I've done things like that as well. I'm not a true believer in the sense that everything I think is caused by supernatural agencies. I still have a great deal of skepticism in what I do. Now, I've seen ghosts. I'll admit it. That's how I got into the stuff. But you know, in the 30 years I've been doing this, I haven't seen more than about 15. That's what's so amazing, is I've seen very few ghosts, even though I've been out looking for them. I believe they really exist.
Have you ever?
They're kind of rare.
Have you ever detected ghosts that you didn't see?
You mean with tools?
With tools and or with psychics.
I have detected ghosts. I have felt their presence myself. I have seen them myself. I've also picked up things on recording devices. And actually, I've managed to even chase down a ghost using an electromagnetic trail, which I was able to determine. And I've been present where psychics were there. And of course, if a psychic says, oh, I see a ghost in the corner, and I see nothing, I don't give that much credibility. But if I say, okay, tell the ghost to do something, and the curtain all of a sudden moves violently just while I made that request, that gives me some credibility. And, of course, I was rushing. There's no strings, no wires, no breeze, nothing to account for what I had witnessed. So I see things like that, and I must admit there could very well be a supernatural agency at work.
Okay, but now when you say you've seen 15 ghosts, you're talking about you have had eyes on, visual contact, and you could see them with your eyes.
With my eyes, I've seen them as full torso, full body apparitions, the whole thing. Sometimes with sound. There are one occasion in the daytime, I even cast a shadow. Yet it walked right through a metal fence as if there was nothing there. As I say, this thing even cast a shadow. And this was like 9 o'clock in the morning. So there are things out there. I've definitely seen my share, but years can go by, I see nothing. Now I can go to a place, have not one experience. And for years, then all of a sudden, out of the blue, bam, something occurs.
All right, I want to go back to ETs for a moment. Well, I see we have a break that's just about to take over. When we come back, I want to get back into the ETs just for a little bit, and then I'll open up the telephone lines for our audience to call in. But I do have one more, important question regarding ETs and their spirits. There it goes. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in the second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And we're talking with Richard Sennett. And Richard is a ghost hunter and quite well known in that field. And someone has let a fly into the studio, and I am now being absolutely harassed by this fly. I will, sometime during the show, commit murder here. I'm going to off this fly and send him to the spirit world. Okay, Richard, let's talk about the ETs for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And because with the added information that you've given me, I've got some more questions about that. It has sure. been said that there were several races. When I say it has been said, there's more than said. There are books published about this and lots of documentaries and so forth about the ancient Sumerians as well as the ancient Indians talking about and writing about this race of people that they referred to as gods. The Sumerians referred to them as, they said the name of the race was the Anunnaki. And that these people came here to the earth and that they engineered us. Now, maybe they did, and maybe they didn't. None of us were there to see it, mm-hmm. but that's the story. In those writings, there are accounts of wars between the gods. And some of these...
In the Bible as well, they talk about angels, of course, mm-hmm. but the wars in heaven are, again, could be symbolic of some other something that wasn't divine, only interpreted as being divine.
Well, an angel is an ET. Anything that's not from here is extraterrestrial. So that means God is an extraterrestrial. He's not from here. That means angels are extraterrestrials. They're not from here. So whatever else, whatever other meanings people want to attach to that is fine, but in the broadest sense of the term, they're not from here, therefore they are extraterrestrial. All right, now, in these ancient accounts, some of these gods get killed. Would their spirit, if their spirit is still around, and if it shows itself or manifests itself in any way, would it register the same on your meter? Now, let me clarify that just a little bit. Here we've got the spirit of John Doe. Now, John Doe was a carpenter. He lived 150 years ago, and he died. And so when he shows up as a ghost, your meter registers, I don't know, what does it have numbers on it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll say it registers a 4, okay? I don't know what that means. We'll just say 4. Okay, it registers a 4.
It'd be more like 16 or 20, but that's all right.
Okay, well, 16. Would the Anunnaki spirit, do you think, register a 16, or would it register a 25?
Again, it's hard to say. We're dealing with unknowns at this point in time. We don't know pretty much what they were like, what their psychic gifts would have been or would not have been. We don't know if they were human and only believed to be gods because of their advanced technology, or if they had supernatural powers, which seems to be implied by the ancient text. So I also have a feeling it has a lot to do with how they passed away. People who die very suddenly and abruptly tend to be more powerful spirits. We do know that archaeologists digging in Egypt have felt the presence of the ancient gods in some of the old temples which they have been excavating, and tombs and things of that nature. So as they might feel the presence of Amun-Ra or Osiris or one of these other gods, perhaps similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah. What I was wondering is, when you're doing an investigation and you're watching that meter and you see a 16, you see a 17, a 18, that's pretty normal, apparently, for a human spirit. Have you ever had one that just absolutely spikes off the rails there?
Yes, I have, and it has occurred in several locations. But again, they've been very quick. It's almost like they go through a door or something. You know, they're there. They're very, very intense. Bam! It's gone, or it's down to a more believable rate. So you've got these kinds of things happening. But again, we're dealing with unknowns. We really have no idea.
I'm wondering if that spike on your meter might possibly indicate a spirit that's not, shall we say, a human spirit.
Might be what they call an elemental, which is a spirit that was never born. Or it could be a spirit of great power, like a shaman or sorcerer or someone like that. But again, as I say, again, we're dealing with unknown territory.
Mm-hmm.
As such, we have to be aware of wherever our information takes us. Now, it would be really nice to do some ghost hunting in the Middle East. I'd love to go to Egypt if someone will pay my way and actually try to get a series of readings in some of these tombs and temples, to see if they would account for some sort of leftover residual from the pagan religious days. I know I'd love to go and investigate on certain religious holidays that the Egyptians had, go on that particular day and compare it to other days to see if the readings would be different. But as I say, this is a new study, and the equipment we're getting is all brand new, and some is more valuable than others, and a lot of work needs to be done.
Do you think it's possible that it will ever come to pass that you'll be able to differentiate from the readings on your meter whether you're dealing with a human spirit or something else?
It's hard to say. I would think that the way technology is going, it's very possible.
So it may be that you and other ghost hunters have detected these spirits of ETs and just didn't know it.
It could very well be, just as certain mold viruses were tempted to reveal to us penicillin. Yet many people thought mold was just a very terrible thing. It could be that something innocent like this will give us a whole new clue. And this is one of the things I like about the study of the paranormal, because this is a study where the amateur has as much chance of making a great discovery as one of the scientists in a university.
All right. I want to open up the telephone lines and allow our audience to join us. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. That number will work from anywhere on this planet, all right, and possibly from planet Nibiru. 623-444-5889. If you're in the USA or you're in Canada, and if you need to call me on a toll-free line, you may do so at 888-223-4599. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call me at 623-444-5889, or you may go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see a link that says Flash Message. You'll find that right under the photograph of Mr. Richard Sennett, okay? And you can send me a flash message. So let's go to the telephone now, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello?
You're on the air. Your first name and from where are you calling? Okay. Goodbye. I guess they didn't want to be on the air. 623-444-5889 for the brave of heart. And toll free at 888-223-4599. Now, I'm going to drop something into the conversation here that has been part of the background behind some of the questions I've asked. And I didn't want to drop it in until we examined those questions. But I got an email from someone in our audience that, and our audience is not monolithic by any stretch of the imagination. Some people are religious moderately, some are very religious, some are not religious at all, some are Christians, some are Muslim, some are Buddhists, and some are Hindu. Truly, whatever the world has in it, we have in the audience. But this happens to be from someone who was quoting from the Christian Bible and quoted a verse that says, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against, I think it says, spirits and principalities and powers in high places." That's kind of what was behind, and the writer of that email was saying, this is a description of spiritual warfare. I wonder if we can detect that going on with the ghost hunter's methods. So that was some of the background behind those questions. Okay, caller, you're alive on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. My name's Ty. I'm calling from British Columbia.
Ty from... You said Ty?
Yeah.
Okay, Ty from British Columbia. All right. What's on your mind this evening, Ty?
I have a question for Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm just going to turn off my headphones here. So, when I was about 9 years old, I was living in Burnaby, B.C., just outside of Vancouver. And I ran into a situation, I guess you could call it, where I had a bunch of ghosts enter my room, and I'll never forget it, of course, at that age.
Ty, let me get you to speak directly into your telephone. We can barely hear you.
So when I was 9 years old, I was living in Burnaby, B.C., and I had a bunch of ghosts enter my room, and they came in partly in through the wall and through the window. And I remember being so frightful, couldn't breathe, crawled my way to the door. There's a little nightlight on in the hallway. I was trying to get to my father, and they began to close the door. And I just remember I could not scream. So I crawled my way to the my father's room. And I, you know, with all the energy I had, I knocked on his door. And he opened the door, and as soon as he touched me, I started crying and screaming, and I told him the story, and he's like, "Oh, you know, you're just imagining. It's just a bad nightmare, blah, blah, blah." Now, my question is, you hear a lot of stories about children who can see spirits and this sort of thing. Now, I've always wondered, we don't have the ability as human beings to necessarily see different dimensions, let's say, but why is it so that children can see this? And why can't that continue on into our adulthood?
A very good question. Children are open to these things. Their psychic gifts are right there. I think as we grow older, we slowly shut them down as unnecessary or maybe something that gets in the way. But a child, being innocent, they are completely open. So they tend to see things, experience things far more readily than an adult, because I think the adults tend to slowly but surely, you know, divorce themselves and shut down these natural psychic gifts. I believe the earliest psychic gifts helped us survive back in the days when we were cavemen and such like that. But having to live in society with other human beings, it got kind of in the way, because it became something that we had to sort of get rid of. So very few people continued those traits. Now, what you had experienced could have been any number of things, from a bad dream, possible, or there have been very realistic dreams, or it could be that there was a one-time event where spirits were somehow in the place where your house was. Perhaps there had been another building there, or there was a road or a path or something. It could be that they were not really trying to hurt you, but were trying to help you in some way. But, of course, you became frightened and had to get out of the situation. I have heard so many stories of young people who've had ghostly problems, who've seen small figures in their bedrooms, have seen humanoid figures, tall, huge figures sometimes. So I believe that children do have the psychic gift, but it's something that they don't really quite understand how it works, and as such can frighten them.
Yeah, I know I was really conscious of the situation just because, I mean, I used to, when I was younger, I used to try things like try and make marbles move with my mind and, you know, mm-hmm. I'd experiment with things like this, just curious, right? I'm 9, 10, or whatever. But I remember a few times in my bed, I would wake up, and I swear this has happened on at least 10 occasions where I can remember, I literally was, I don't know whether it was in my mind or not, but I'm very conscious of it. I was just hovering above my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd wake up and calm down. Sorry, go ahead.
Very common. What you're talking about is leaving your body, astral projection. I talked to one young man who did that. He was trying to leave his body. That one day, he woke up and he was walking across the bedroom, and he tried to turn the light on, but his hand would go right through the light switch without causing it to turn on. And when he turned around, he saw himself sleeping in the bed. So he was outside of his body. Of course, it freaked him out. He said, "Yeah, how am I going to get back? How am I going to get back?" So he started screaming and woke up in bed. They said he was never so glad to be back in his body, and he stopped all those experiments he'd been trying to leave his body. He succeeded beyond his wildest expectations. But again, young people have these gifts, and that's why I'm very, very aware of it. And when a child or a young person tells me they're having something go on, I tend to believe them.
All right, Ty, are you a first-time caller?
Yeah, actually, I called once before. I got cut off. I used a magic jack. Got cut off in the process, so yeah.
All right, well, let's get some applause for you. Thanks for the call. All right. Thank you, Ty, from British Columbia. The telephone lines are open at 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. I have a notice. What happens if you're in the United States and you send me a flash message? I get a little notice that there's a flash message, but when I open it, it's blank. And it just says United States. And that's based on the IP address, okay? So if you're in the United States, we have a phone number, two of them for you. And if you're outside the United States, the purpose of the flash message is outside of the United States and outside of Canada, we don't have a toll-free number for those folks. That's why there's a flash message for them, okay? In the USA and Canada, there's a telephone, and you can call the main number or the toll-free number, and that's the way it works. So if you're in the USA and you send me a flash message, it'll never get read. I don't even see it. I see a notice that it came in, but that's all I see. I don't see the text. All right. Richard, you said you've heard lots of stories about children waking up and there's these little people in the room. What's the difference in that and the ETs?
Well, again, it's hard to say. In fact, some of the figures described are more like leprechauns, you know, little Irish people. But do I believe in leprechauns? I don't think so.
Why not?
I think they may well be projections of the mind. I believe that the human mind is so powerful that we can actually, with due concentration, create things. Enough people think that there should be a ghost in a place. I believe they might be able to actually create one. And there are accounts of people who've tried to do this and have been successful. So,
well, see, now how do we know they created a ghost? How do we know that that desire of theirs didn't call a ghost?
Yep, that's another theory. In fact, it's very possible that people who wish to create a ghost have simply nothing more than channeled into something that's already there or nearby and caused it to come. Again, we're walking on jello. We don't have a lot of firm theories.
Mm-hmm. How does religion play into ghost hunting?
Oh, it's very important. In fact, a lot of people, especially our Christian friends, don't like ghost hunting. In fact, I've gotten hate mail from religious groups. Now, oddly enough, I've never gotten any from a mainstream religion, like the Lutherans or Methodists or Catholics or anything like that. They're all kind of flaky, far-out sorts of Christian groups. One particular church wrote me lots of strange letters. And they were a Baptist church that was so far out that the Baptists had thrown them out. So they weren't even officially part of the Baptist church. And they, of course, wrote me letters with lots of quotes from the Bible, which, of course, I read. I've read the Bible from cover to cover. I know all about it. And contrary to a lot of public opinion, the Bible is just chock full of ghosts. Supernatural events all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing incompatible with ghost hunting to be found in Christianity. So I found that to be the case also with other major religions on planet Earth, Muslims, Jewish, Hindus, or others.
All right, we have a break coming up, and let me go to the telephone line here, and caller, are you willing to hang on till we get back from break?
I sure am, Kevin.
All right, you hang in there, and we'll get back to you. The reason, Richard, I ask about religion is because there is a theory that if you don't believe in the religion, anybody's religion, that pretty much excludes belief in ghosts, and yet non-religious people still see ghosts. Therefore, they use that as an evidence or a proof that ghosts exist apart from any religious belief. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Richard Sennett is my guest. And, Richard, we have a caller on hold, so let's go straight to the phone line. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Stefan in Quebec City, Kevin.
Hi, Stefan.
Hello. Mr. Sennett, I was wondering, a lot of times throughout my life, I felt that as though I've been guided by, I would say, entities or spirits or ghosts. I'm not sure what the difference is, but... It always felt like I was being tested. In other words, if I could work through the fear and work, confront them face to face, that, you know, there would be a breakthrough in something like that. And recently, in the last 2 months, I had an experience for the first time in my life where something did come into my room. And I don't know why, I'm not a religious person, but I asked the entity, I said, if you're aligned with Jesus Christ, then you can stay, but if you're not, please leave. And I just fell asleep. But I was wondering, is there a way to bring that contact back about, or is it just through intent?
I tend to think that you did the right thing by asking it in the name of Jesus, if you are there for good or ill. According to Catholic traditions, if it is there to help you, be it a spirit given divine guidance to come down to meet with you, or a guardian angel, it would help you. But if it was, in fact, of the devil or something evil, it would leave. So I think you were very wise to do that. Now, I tend to think these things are spontaneous, which means I don't think you can actually invite it back to somehow come back and help you. Of course, prayer is always good. I've always believed that the power of prayer is something that can actually move mountains, as the Mohammedans believe. I think that if you pray for an answer, in fact, every time I prayed, I usually end up with an answer. May not be the one I want, but it always comes with an answer. I do believe that there's definitely a role in religion and prayer in the study of ghost hunting, just as I believe there's a role for religion in all of the sciences.
Well, thank you very much for your answer, Mr. Sennett, and keep up the great work. You too, Kevin. Thank you.
All right, thank you. 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. And we have a flash message from the United Kingdom. Let's see, who is this from? Nicholas in the United Kingdom. Hi, Kevin. An amazing show as usual. Many years ago, when at school, I was involved in a project where I had to photograph the interior of my home. I took dozens of photos, but in one photograph alone, there was clearly visible the image of a woman wearing a dress that was covered with many star-like points of light. Her head could also be clearly seen. The strangest thing of all was that she had no face. I have since come across photos supposedly showing ghosts, some which similarly have no faces. I would appreciate your opinions on this phenomenon. Well, what about that, Richard?
Well, many faceless ghosts are seen and reported. Remarkably, many of those are found in the Mediterranean countries and in Mexico. But faceless ghosts are a rarer occasion occur in Scotland and the United Kingdom. Now, many times the ghost without the face is someone who doesn't want their identity known. The face is not there for a reason. They don't want to be associated with the person they were linked to in life. So whatever it was there was probably not wanting to be recognized. Also, the dress he described, the points of light. I've heard this over and over again. Now, of course, I've never seen anything like that, but my mother saw something like that. She was suffering from a terrible illness, tuberculosis, back in the 1930s. And she was near death, and she saw a figure appear, again with the starlight around her, on her dress and on her forehead, and she told her that it wasn't her time and that she would recover. And of course, she did recover from the illness at that time. So I think this might be an implication that this was a guardian spirit who was there, perhaps a relative from old or someone linked to you, who is coming there to give you a message of peace and comfort. I would dare say this might have been a time of great trial and tribulation in your life. Perhaps your parents were undergoing some great trauma, or maybe you had to face some unpleasant news or events. These might be what caused the spirit to come in hopes of helping you. Unfortunately, all that left was a great enigma of what in the world you had seen.
All right, back to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Sky from Alabama.
Hello, Sky.
How are you?
Good.
I wanted to make a comment. He was talking about being able to create things out of thought.
Okay.
And you can do that. Those are thought forms. But there's also something called a tulpa, T-U-L-P-A. I don't know if you've heard of that or not, but it's a Tibetan word. And it's when you have masses of people that believe in something for so long that it actually takes on physical form. And I believe Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster, may be a tulpa.
I think you're right. I think that many times the sightings of the Virgin Mary, for instance, that it took place recently in Egypt, where they saw her appearing to hover at the dome of a large Christian church there. I think many of these might be those, I've never heard the word before, as tulpas, but they sound believable because enough people want something to happen. I believe they can psychically, collectively create a form that will answer their need. This might account for some of these religious creatures which have been seen throughout the ages. You know, if you study the ancient Greeks, there are many accounts, especially in their hospitals, where people prayed to Asclepius, the god of health, and he actually would appear to them. Now, what had they seen? Was this a ghost masquerading as Asclepius? Was it a demon? If it's a demon, why is it doing good things? Or was it some kind of projection that a group of people had created this image to give comfort and help? It could be just that. But as I say, there's a lot we don't know, and more research is certainly needed on this. But I think you're probably right.
All right, Sky, thank you for the call. All the way from Alabama. We haven't heard from Sky in a while. Good to hear from you, Sky. 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. And, you know, this whole thing with ghosts and ghost hunting has really captured the imagination of the public to the point that now television has a veritable plethora of ghost shows. I think the first one was Taps. I could be wrong, but I think they were the first actual ghost hunting group with a television show. But there's a whole bunch of them out there now. And one of the things that happens when you get a proliferation of any type of programming is that after a little bit, people will get burned out on it. I mean, look at all the stuff that, you know, you had Star Trek, Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, and I can't even remember, what was it, Star Quest? And then all of a sudden, well, those movies are not really making it much anymore, and those TV shows are not making it that well anymore. Because people got burned out on it. Too much for too long. So what happens to ghost hunting once we hit the burnout point on ghost hunting television?
Well, I think that day is coming. In fact, my biggest fear as a ghost hunter is one of these little offshoot groups might be attempting to secure ratings and they're caught cheating. And if that happens, they're going to tar us all with the same brush. They'll say, oh, you're a ghost hunter, you're a cheat, like those people on TV were. Remember back a few years ago, they had the game shows?
Yeah.
Found out that the $64 million question was rigged,
yeah.
And it just wrecked it. They're all tarred with the same brush. That's one of my fears. And I think that society's fickle. You know, just like, you remember when I was a kid, everything was Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
Westerns here, cowboys, Wyatt Earp, you know, Sugarfoot, Bonanza.
I had forgotten about Sugarfoot. I remember Sugarfoot. I had forgotten that even existed.
I like Sugarfoot, too. It's pretty good. It's a young man who's a lawyer. And a gunfighter.
Yeah. I guess that's helpful if you're a gunfighter to be a lawyer, too. You might need it.
Yeah, you might actually need the little legal advice. But all those that were there, now all of a sudden, poof, they're gone. And now it was spies. Everything was I spy, and this, that, and the other. Now it's drug dealers and cops and robbers. We're still doing some of that. And these things come and go, and of course the cycle of ghost hunting will come and it will go, and I will continue to investigate ghosts no matter what, and we'll see what in the world happens. But again, it's fickle society, and a lot of the TV shows aren't really very good, because I like to compare the TV shows on ghost huntings to TV shows on police work. Real police work takes hours and hours of mind-numbing stakeouts and such. You don't always wrap the case up in an hour. Of course not. And the same is true of ghost hunting.
Yeah,
you can't
true.
Just go out to a place, find your ghost, and take off the next day. Doesn't work that way. I go back to a place sometimes, 15, 20 times. I have reports which are 25, 30, maybe 100 pages. So you're using different teams of people to collect data and evaluate it. So you're, it's not 1 hour. You breeze in, find a few things, get a little image of something on tape, and then you're off to the next site. They're making a TV show to entertain people. They're not really doing honest to goodness ghost hunting.
Well, I was watching one several weeks ago where they were purporting. Now, I'll tell you, it was not Taps, but I was watching this, and they were purporting to be playing for us an EVP. And I'm telling you, I work with audio every single day. That was someone off camera whispering.
Yeah,
and you can tell it. You can tell easily that that's what it was.
EVP is so hard, and I only tape type A, which is the best kind. Type A is where you get a tape, and you can play it to five people, and they all tell you what it says, you know, different times.
Hate to do it. A break just took over. We're going to have to step away for a couple of minutes. We'll be back right after this. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Richard Sennett, and we're talking about ghost hunting. And when we went away, I had just made the comment that, you know, I deal with audio daily. In fact, I'm dealing with audio right now. And I for hours every day, I'm working with audio. That doesn't make me an expert, but it does make me an informed observer. And I was watching one of the ghost shows where they purported to give us an EVP, and you could tell for sure that was someone off camera and pretty close to the camera, pretty close to the mic, whispering. And they passed that off on television as if it was an EVP. It was a DVP, deceptive voice phenomena. And you were commenting on EVPs when we had to go to break.
Yes, it's so easy to fake. That's the only thing that's bad about it. That's why it's important, like, to take an EVP message and break it down with the audio equipment, and then get samples of everyone's voice and run it through the audio equipment to see if you get a voice print. And if you can't get a voice print, that means that it might be something supernatural. But if it does, so many times I've gotten this where it's, in fact, one of the people inadvertently whispering or subconsciously even whispering, and they pick that up as EVP. Another thing we get are sounds, which kind of sound like human speech, mm-hmm. but people interpret it to be something supernatural. Over and over again, I've heard that, and to me it sounds like, blah, blah, blah. And they say, oh, can't you hear that? It says, you know, this or that. I was murdered, and I listen, and I can't get I was murdered. All I get is, blah, 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 little yeah. itty-bitty sounds. Mm-hmm. So some people, it's a wishful thinking. They want it to be ghostly. They want it to be supernatural, where, in fact, it might just be an anomaly.
All right. We have a flash message from Patrick in Australia. And he says, good day, Kevin and Richard. I took a photo during the summer solstice at Stonehenge a few years ago, which has some monk-like shapes in it. Note, it was the only photo out of about 300 that I took on that trip that had any, and he has it in quotes, faults on it. It was taken on a Minolta film camera. I was wondering if I could forward it to Richard for an opinion. I forwarded it to the druid at Stonehenge, who kindly replied and said they get many interesting photos sent, but I've not shared it with anyone else. So if he wants to send it to you, how would he send that to you, Richard?
Well, just get on my website, and that's Richard Sennett, S-E-N-A-T-E, two words, really one word, richardsennett.com, and there's a way to email me right there at that site. I'd very much like to see it. Now, I was at Stonehenge myself in my recent trip to England, and when I took, I have never gotten so many orbs or shadows as I did in Stonehenge. There was no rain, there was no fog, the weather was great, but I got all of these weird things at Stonehenge, so I'll concur with them. That's a very, very haunted place. And oddly enough, I took lots of pictures, but only Stonehenge and one other spot gave me anything that you could call an anomaly.
Why do you think there are so many anomalies at Stonehenge?
I think they're supernaturally charged. The only other place in England I got was at Hampton Court outside of London, which is an old palace that Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn owned and lived in, and perhaps haunt. So I managed to get something there, but all these other places, the Tower of London, all the other, I didn't get anything. But there's some something definitely mystical and magical about Stonehenge.
You know, they say Stonehenge is sitting right on top of a ley line intersection. And so it's possible, I would think, that if what we're talking about when we talk about ghosts, if we're talking about them being energy, then it's possible that around these ley line intersections you would have more ghostly activity.
Well, that's the theory behind ley lines, is that they ghosts use them to travel. And where they meet, they call that a node. There are psychic energies. Now, I've done dowsing, because that's how you find ley lines. And some of the things I've found here in California seem to confirm those findings from Great Britain. And they believe this net surrounds the earth of lines that connect the various sacred places and haunted places. So I think it's very possible.
So maybe the ley lines are, maybe whatever it is they do makes the veil thinner between the world or universe in which the ghost exists and our universe. So maybe the ley lines cause that to be thinner there.
It's possible. As I say, there's much we don't know. And there are ley lines that were just a fascinating study, and I'd like to do more work with them. So I think there's some validity to it.
I don't know if you're familiar with Walter Bosley. Walter is a publisher.
Yeah,
and
Walter.
I'm sorry?
I know Walter.
Oh, you know Walter.
Good guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he is a good guy. And for our audience, he is author and publisher, and he is also former special agent for U.S. Air Force OSI. And he has written a fabulous book dealing with ley lines, and you can get it on our website. But Walter's done a whole bunch, and I mean a bunch of studies about the ley lines out in California. And he's published a book by a man named Sesh Hari, The Handprint of Atlas. And that deals with the ley lines in great detail. And after reading...
One of the great centers of ley lines is Disneyland, of all things.
Yeah, that's what his book is about, Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom. And that's what it's about. And the largest node of ley lines in the United States is right out here south of Phoenix. And he's been out here with me taking a look at that, and we found some pretty amazing things. We're just about out of time. Richard, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. It's been fascinating.
Oh, it's been fun being on. Sorry we had some difficulty at first, but I'm glad we got together and could share some of my work and some of what you're doing.
I am too. And if you will, just stay on the line with me for just a moment as I close the show. I'd like to talk with you for a moment after I'm off the air. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, this Saturday evening is when we do our monthly chat. I go into the chat room, and we're going to do something a little different this time. If you have a webcam and a microphone, then you can, hopefully, we're going to try this. You can join us with video where we can see you and hear you and talk to you. And so hopefully we'll be able to do that. We're going to give it a try, and provided we don't have too much pilot error here, we'll be able to pull that off. And I hope we can do it. It'll be a lot of fun. That'll be Saturday evening, and chat begins at showtime. So whatever time the Kevin Smith Show comes on every night in your area, that's the time to go to the chat room. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.